Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Thanks for joining me for today's podcast, Coronavirus Facts Only. I wanted to talk with two doctors today. Later, we'll talk with Dr. Fred Buchhold at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. But first, I wanted to talk with Dr. Guy Venezia. Dr. Venezia is an OBGYN at SSM Health St. Clair Hospital in Fenton about pregnancy and the pandemic. Dr. Venezia, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a different, unprecedented time.
It really is. And I wanted to ask you about this new study about pregnant women and coronavirus. What are we finding out?
Well, interestingly, there wasn't a lot of information when this first came out, so we got some initial reports from China and Italy, and then this recent study that came out of New York over the last month in March has helped us to identify one. There's a lot of asymptomatic patients out there, and that just means patients walking around that don't have any symptoms, no fever, no cough, but are still shedding the virus. So if we have both patients that are showing up that are symptomatic, meaning they have fevers, cough, then we're immediately alerted to that risk. But then there's this silent group out there that are asymptomatic, about 30%, that are shedding the virus that we may not know about. The good news so far is this doesn't seem to be affecting pregnancy or our pregnant moms as hard as the flu, influenza, some of the previous infections or pandemics. So far, it's been good news with regard to vertical transmission, meaning if the mom is positive, transferring that to the baby through the placenta or while she's pregnant. And most of the studies that we've seen out of China, Italy, and even New York, there's been no vertical transmission to the baby. So that's the encouraging thing. The thing that we're still trying to discover or better understand is, with these patients that have the virus, are these moms affected as severely as in the past with SARS or the influenza, the swine flu? And we know that those hit our moms very hard. Initial reports, and again, this is growing, emerging data, but initial reports show that moms do not seem to have as significant disease process as those past infectious diseases. They're really acting similar to the general public. You know, 80, 85% mild symptoms do well. About 10% will have some more significant symptoms. And then, you know, more critical or more severe disease is around that 3 to 5% range.
That is encouraging, though, because don't pregnant women generally have a lower immune system?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, pregnancy will affect moms in many ways. Obviously, there's a lot of nutritional and exercise and physiological changes. But with their immune system, they are somewhat immunocompromised or changed during that pregnancy, along with some of the change in the respiratory or the lung capacity. So getting a virus is simple like the flu, instead of you and me at home taking our Tamiflu, just getting through that for 72 hours or so, moms can get very sick from the flu. They can have more severe respiratory symptoms that can affect the oxygenation and the supply to the baby. But so far with the COVID-19 or the coronavirus, they do not seem to be responding worse than the general public.
What about in those mothers who have high-risk pregnancies?
So we are working with part of our program here. We have a multidisciplinary team at SSM with Cardinal Glennon, the neonatologist, and our SLU maternal fetal medicine. So in some of those high-risk pregnancies, there has been shown a little bit of association with the COVID-19 and potentially preterm labor. So we're keeping an eye on that for women that may be having cramping or contractions. But the typical high-risk pregnancies that we treat, we have to treat differently with COVID. So with the COVID-19, we don't necessarily use steroids as often. So if you have a premature baby or you're in preterm labor, many times we'll give the mom steroids to help mature the baby's lungs and help the baby tolerate being prematurely born. But we are less likely to use that because the steroids may impact the COVID respiratory infection. Some of the other medications that we use routinely, someone who has high blood pressure or trying to prevent seizures, typically we would use magnesium sulfate to decrease the risk of seizures. But with that respiratory complications, magnesium depresses the respiratory. So everything we're doing, even for high risk, we have to rethink and kind of adjust how we manage and assess the medications or the treatments we're giving these high-risk moms that have either pregnancy under investigation, meaning we're waiting for the test to come back and they have symptoms, or if they truly have the COVID-19 virus.
We're talking with Dr. Guy Venezia. He's an OBGYN at SSM Health St. Clair Hospital in Fenton about pregnancy during a pandemic. Dr. Venezia, what's it like for pregnant women when they come into the hospital to deliver? Do they have to undergo a special COVID test?
Yeah, unfortunately, we're living in unprecedented times. So everything that normally happens when you come to the hospital to have a baby, and it's one of the reasons most of us choose this, it's a celebration, the family's there, it's a life-changing moment. But as you've probably heard, we have significantly diminished the amount of visitors, and the whole experience is somewhat more for the safety of the mom and the baby. So when they come in, they immediately get their temperature taken. We look for any kind of symptomatology. We'll ask them if they're having a cough, difficulty breathing. And if they have any of those symptoms, we would then start to isolate them. And if there's a fever, certainly we would admit them and send off a COVID-19 test. Currently, our tests are much better than what was initially reported. We can get those back within 24 hours. And then our whole management of using personal protection, masks, gloves, and even for the partner, father of the baby, and the mom would also use personal protection. So the whole experience is different from the moment they step into labor and delivery. We're taking every precaution and erring on the side of safety to make sure that the mom and the baby have a healthy experience and we protect them.
I know it's a moving target, but where are we now when it comes to visitors for a delivery?
Yeah, so great question. And as evolving, so as I'm talking to you, it may change, and I may have to say this just in. I always wanted to say that as a reporter. So it is changing. And so currently we allow one visitor, the partner, to come in with mom. And once they're here, they're here. We really don't allow exchanging in and out for different people to come in. So when you hear the one visitor, it's truly just that one visitor. And that follows the mom through the labor, delivery, and the postpartum. And then after the baby's born, if the baby is put into the nursery or there's any premature or special care nursery or NICU, for the first 3 days, both mom and dad or mom and the partner can visit the baby. But then once the mother is discharged, if the baby stays in the special care nursery or has to stay in the NICU, then one designated parent can visit. And I know that's really challenging and it's difficult for our new moms and for the babies. But again, this is such a contagious disease. We're really just trying to protect the baby. And the good news, if you look at it with the goal of having a healthy baby, is that we're not seeing vertical transmission to the baby. So these babies are born with a COVID negative test. And really the risk is the follow-up, the interaction with the droplet and coughing, sneezing after the baby's born. So using gloves, gown, mask, and limiting the exposure to visitors really does help. But as you can imagine, most of the time when I go into a delivery, I'm walking through a whole crowd of people cheering on the delivery, and now you go in and it's just a different feel. It's just mom and the partner.
Dr. Venezia, what advice do you have for women who are pregnant?
Yeah, there's a lot of good advice out there, and I think moms need to start thinking about this when they get to 35 or 36 weeks. They really need to already self-quarantine and kind of disassociate from a lot of crowds, as the public's doing, and that social distancing is very important. And they may even want to consider, when they get to about 38 or 39 weeks, they want to come in to the hospital for their labor and their delivery or their C-section with no symptoms and no risk of the virus. So having their partner or their kids or other people do some of those tasks so that they can stay home and stay healthy is great advice. They may want to start talking to their obstetrician about being induced after they get to 39 weeks to make sure that they're healthy and they get in and have their baby. And then other things we're recommending is to make sure they have the mask and gloves and personal protection and bring that to the hospital with them. So even if they are the asymptomatic shedder, which is about 30% of the patients, they would want to wear that if they have any symptoms just to protect the newborn baby while they're in the hospital.
Anything else you want to add, doctor?
I want to just encourage that the good news that we're hearing across the world and now in New York with all these infectious COVID pregnant patients, that your baby is healthy. There's good evidence that you will not transmit it to your baby, that you do not have any worsening disease than the general public. And if you do good hand hygiene, social distance, wear a mask, and do the normal things that the CDC is recommending, we can provide a very safe environment so that you can celebrate your new birth and new family the way that you imagined it and you want it to go. So I think those things can be super beneficial, and we're here and we're ready, and we have a multidisciplinary team of maternal fetal medicine, neonatologists, and obstetricians ready to take care of you.
Dr. Venezia, thanks so much for your time. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate the time, and anything that you need, just let us know.
Dr. Guy Venezia is an OBGYN at SSM Health St. Clair Hospital in Fenton. Let's talk now with Dr. Fred Buchold. Dr. Buchold is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchold, thanks for joining us again.
Always happy to.
We heard yesterday from the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention saying that he expects the coronavirus death toll to be much lower than projected in those original models. What do you think about that?
I don't know what to think. First and foremost, projections by themselves are really hard, you know, and really what they're doing is give you a range of possibilities to kind of make a estimate of what you need to do and how you can kind of anticipate the worst case versus the best case scenario or somewhere in between. So, you know, we talked about that about the St. Louis region yesterday of you know, you have a wide range of possibilities and you want to kind of think through that and be prepared. That's the point of them. You know, and I mentioned a couple times, and again, I've had a set of discussions with a colleague yesterday about this, is, you know, I think there's definitely a strong sense amongst the healthcare community that the CDC is really getting it wrong, in the sense of the guidance they are giving us is really not out of the sense of the best thing for the healthcare of the population and for the protection of healthcare providers specifically, but one out of convenience and political expediency, and not saying anything about the politics, but just the fact that, you know, we don't have face masks, and that's a massive problem, and they say, well, just use cloth masks, and we're just kind of sitting here saying that doesn't really make any sense. That would never fly in any other situation, so why is this appropriate now? What's the science behind that? What's the rationale for that? And so, you know, I think we're a little leery of what the CDC says, and I think, you know, I think that colors my impression of that. Is this somebody that's trying to give us factual information and guide our care, or trying to just kind of put a different thing out there to make it look a little bit more rosy than it might be? And, you know, the truth is nobody really knows until we get through this and see what the numbers actually show. And you know, that's what really matters. And I think the smart person and the smart, I think, leaders in healthcare are preparing for the worst. And we're looking at our colleagues in New York and in Seattle and just saying, okay, let's be ready. Let's be smart. If it's not as bad as that, great. If it is, you know, then at least we know what we're getting into and we can try to deal with it as best as we can and learn some lessons from them.
You're joining us today from work at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Paint a picture for us. What's it like there?
You know, it's relatively calm. I'm really impressed and proud of just the professionalism of people going about their work. And I really have to specifically say nurses who are, in my mind, the true heroes of this, of dealing with this pandemic. I am just so impressed and privileged to be with colleagues like that, that are so dedicated and brave and taking care of patients in truly a difficult and scary situation. But it's a bit empty. And this has been talked about a lot, is the normal patients we're used to taking care of the hospital are not there to the degree that we're used to. And it's a bit of a strange feeling. And it feels, you know, because everybody, you know, a lot of essential people are out and, you know, working from home, and it just feels a little bit emptier than a place that has thousands of people usually working in it is. And it was a slightly eerie feeling to do it, but, it's just, I think, a sign of the times.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. I saw a piece in the New York Times yesterday headlined, "Where Have All the Heart Attacks Gone?" It talks about how there's been a big decrease in people having heart attacks these past few days, people not coming into the hospital, maybe waiting until things get a lot worse regarding some of their health conditions. Are you seeing that?
Yes and no. I mean, again, definitely our census is much lower than what we're used to seeing. And again, part of that, I'm sure, is, you know, again, some of the routine stuff we usually do, routine, you know, surgeries and operations and such, we're not doing, you know, to try to protect our patients and our providers, frankly. So there's that component. But I do think there's probably a component of people staying away, you know, when they should. And you know, we've talked about the asthmatic patient when, you know, perhaps a year ago, if they had some shortness of breath and they were kind of, you know, many of us have been through this before. You're at this, you know, 50-50 shot. Should I go? Should I not go? And I think a lot of people lean on going just to kind of make sure that they're okay, you know, with that nervousness of, you know, if you have an asthma exacerbation or if you're having chest pain, you know, is this or is this not a heart attack? And I think, you know, that whole decision-making has changed, and probably to the extreme of people that really do need to come in and get evaluated are not coming to get evaluated, and what's the downstream effects of that. The other thing, too, is, you know, that's interesting with things like heart disease is a lot of times it's subtle and it goes undetected. And so, you know, are we picking up more things because we're doing more tests and other things in the hospital? Are we doing too many tests and overdiagnosing people? That's always been a thing I worry about and think about and write about in my other life. But, you know, I think those are all interesting questions that, you know, as we kind of evolve through this, we're going to find out and kind of ask these questions. You know, we've done things a certain way for a long time, and that's completely been upended. And, you know, how does that change our practice, you know, once we start to kind of get back to normal, so to speak? One of my best friends is a urologist, I think I mentioned, in Phoenix. I mean, their practice is effectively shut down. There is nothing that they are doing. You know, what does their practice look like when people maybe realize that, you know, the things that they went to urologists for, they kind of cope with for a while, does that change? Or does their payment model change? Or, you know, I think there's a really interesting questions about how this is going to change the face of healthcare in the United States, aside from the obvious of just, you know, just dealing with a pandemic and how this has really kind of stretched a lot of people in a massive way. For others, it's really stretched them in the sense of their whole sense of what their practice has been like for 5, 10, 20 years or for the future is going to change. And that's scary and interesting. And, you know, I think that's going to be a big component of this going forward. And you know, the reason people aren't coming right now may be reasons why they don't come in the future. And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. I think it's just an interesting how our behaviors change so quickly, so fast.
Dr. Buchholz, I've got some listener questions for you again today. Here's the first one. This listener wants to know, can the virus enter my body through a cut as opposed to entering through the respiratory system?
The short answer is it can enter. Does it get you infected, which is probably the bigger answer? And I think the simple answer is I don't think so. You know, again, two things have to happen with that. One is you have to have a a large enough inoculum or number of viruses that you get contaminated with to start infection. And then it looks like it enters the body and enters the cells. Remember, viruses are obligate intracellular organisms. What that means, taking the fancy words and making it simple, is they have to work their way into your cells in order to replicate and make more copies of themselves. And they have a particular liking to the type of cells that are in our nasal and oral cavities. And so, and then that's how they kind of work their way in and cause some of the problems that they do. So, as we're understanding this more and more, there certainly is a affinity for those areas. So I don't think so. Again, nothing's impossible. And again, we're learning new things every day, but I'd be less worried about that than, again, the contact to the, your oral nasal cavity and mucous membranes. So your eyes are part of this too. That's why that's also part of the concern.
Another listener wants to know, can I use a neti pot or nasal rinsing to help prevent COVID-19?
Oh, well, that's a great question. I'd be worried about, if it's clean and not used amongst others, or you can kind of guarantee its source. I don't think it would prevent. I certainly think it's a treatment many use to kind of treat chronic sinus congestion. And does that help or hurt? Maybe it keeps you from wiping your nose a little bit more or from rubbing your face or touching your face. I don't think it's a classic, using that would prevent the spread of the virus if you had it. Again, I don't say that with any certainty whatsoever. I think it's one of those things of I don't think there's a huge upside or downside with that right now.
This listener wants to know, should she take vitamin C supplements to increase her immunity?
Yeah, that's a great question. Vitamin C has been kind of a hot little vitamin right now. There is a study it's probably about 5 years ago now in the ICU that showed it actually improved outcomes with people with sepsis. And so that really got the ball rolling, and a lot more studies have been done investigating that. And, again, as you do more of this research, you find out that one kind of positive study really was maybe an anomaly, and it doesn't show it has much effect. I would say more a good nutritious diet, high in fruits and vegetables and well-balanced, will probably do more for your immunity and your overall well-being and helping you fight this off than just taking one vitamin or another. Vitamin C has really not been shown to have that immunity boosting effect it's been purported to have. And again, in the armamentarium of things, if you're concerned about this, and everybody is, of course, good hand washing is number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Social distancing is the next, 5 or 10 in that order. And then everything under that is kind of, I think, the things that may or may not have a benefit, but the returns are quite marginal. Stay away, wash your hands thoroughly. Those are really the key things. And the vitamin C probably doesn't help that much, unfortunately.
Dr. Buchholz, thanks a lot for your time. Again, really do appreciate it.
Always. Thank you. And enjoy the questions. It was really good. So appreciate it.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. This is KMOX health editor Fred Bottomer. Thanks so much for joining us for today's podcast, Coronavirus Facts Only. Talk to you again tomorrow.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!